Awesome. It's clear that when the roads are this way, I'm going to have to take a little bit different plan on how I'm going to be able to get here from the uptown location. It takes a little bit longer. How many of you are enjoying the snow? That is about exactly what I expected for the response to be. It's been funny because I'm listening to people talk about the snow and everyone like you, right, is saying that you don't like it. And I keep asking people, where do you think you live? Because you do understand that we're supposed to get snow here, right? But it's a little bit more than what we're used to. I was disappointed this morning because I've been trying to take advantage of this because we don't know how many times we're going to get storms like this. But I was disappointed because I don't have Caden's ice skates, and this morning was the perfect chance to ice skate down the roads of Hoboken, right? I mean, I woke up and Park Ave was a solid sheet of ice. It was amazing. But I'm glad you guys made it and that you're here today and we get to walk through this together. If you haven't been with us, right now we're in the middle of this conversation called Bedrock, and we're looking at how we can begin to build unshakable families. And oftentimes inside of our culture, we look at family or we interact with family based on this idea that no one really knows how it's supposed to look or how it's supposed to work. And so you just kind of do what you think you're supposed to do and you hope that it works out, which, as we said last week, isn't really any hope at all. And unfortunately, for many of us, and unfortunately for many inside of our culture, because of the fact that we look at family this way, because of the fact that we interact with family this way, we find ourselves in situations like the song that Dana just sang. We find ourselves in situations where there once was a relationship that had a tremendous amount of hope, but then all of a sudden you find yourself at the end, and you're just about to give up. And you're looking at each other and thinking, how did we get here? And I wish you'd just say something. I wish there was some way that we could fix this. But for some of us who are here today, we're looking at it and thinking, it's over. And unfortunately, I think because of the fact that we look at family the way that we do, unfortunately for so many of us, we'll find ourselves, if we haven't already, in situations where what we had hoped our family would be is gone. And as we look at this conversation, and as we walk through this conversation, what we're doing is we're trying to bring hope back to the idea of family. And Jesus Christ has something amazing to say about the idea of how we're building our lives and how we're building our homes. And this is the foundation upon which we're having this entire conversation. I want to take you to a passage. It's found in Matthew chapter 7, beginning in verse 24. It says this, it says, anyone who listens to my teaching and follows it is wise, like a person who builds a house on solid rock. Though the rain comes in torrents and floodwaters rise and the winds beat against that house, it won't collapse because it is built on bedrock. Jesus is having this conversation with his followers, and he says, listen. Listen to what I said. If you will take what I'm teaching you and you will put it into practice, it's like building your home. It's like building your house. It's like building your life on bedrock. And it doesn't matter what storm comes against it, it will remain unshakable. Now, for me, that's real hope. And I believe in your life and my life, as it pertains to this idea of family, no matter where you are on this journey, I believe that God wants to bring not just hope in that you hope it works out, but I believe he wants to bring real hope that we can actually begin to build and experience unshakable families. And that's what this entire conversation is about. And that's what we're looking to do and what we're looking to explore as we come to God's Word. And so we see this unbelievable promise of Jesus Christ, which takes us back to the book of Ephesians. If you haven't been with us for the past month, we've been working through the book of Ephesians. And we spent the first 4 weeks of this year looking at this unbelievable story that we're part of and how God is bringing his family together. And how, as he's bringing this family together, he's building this family based on something called submission. And based on this idea that he did not consider equality with God as something to grasp, something to hold on to, but that he became our servant, that he gave himself to purchase us back, to adopt us into this family. And for the first 4 weeks of this year, we're looking at how he's been gathering that family. But as you work through the book of Ephesians, not only does he talk about how he's gathering his family, but as you continue to work through the book, you see him beginning to speak to our own individual families and how we begin to build and interact with our own individual families in light of the family that he's built. And so you see this example of submission at the beginning and how he's gathered his family based on it. And then you get to Ephesians chapter 5, verse 21. And this is the verse that we looked at last week, right? That in light of what he's done, now we, as we're looking to build families, we should build them on submission as well. Ephesians chapter 5, verse 21 says this. It says, in further, in light of the fact of everything that we've been talking about, he says, and further, submit to one another out of reverence for Christ. And then he begins to break down the relationships inside the family. So he says, okay, wives, this is how you do that with your husbands. Husbands, this is how you do that with your wives. Children, this is how you do that with your parents. Parents, this is how you do that with your children. He says, listen, if you want to build an unshakable family, then you build it on submission. Jesus says, you want a home that's built on bedrock? You listen to what I say. You get to Ephesians, he says, this is what the foundation is. Submission. And so last week we talked about that idea and what it looks like to consider someone else as more important than ourselves. And we exchanged those cards, if you remember, exchanging our dreams and our hopes, living for someone else's hopes and dreams. But even as we walked out of here last week, if you're anything like me, you walked out with a little bit of attention. Because it's one thing to know that we're supposed to submit, but then what exactly does that look like? I mean, how exactly do you do that? I understand the general idea of it, but I need it to be a little more specific. I need to put a little more meat on those bones because I'm not really sure that I know how to practice that on a day-to-day basis. Which is why as we continue in this conversation, what I want to do is I want to begin to look at each of those roles that he walks through and begin to break those down because I think that we can learn a lot from each one of those roles and what he's calling us to do in each other's lives as he's explaining that role. Today we're going to begin with the role of the husband. And the writer begins with the role of the wife, but we're going to begin with the role of husband, and I'll explain to you as we walk through it why. The role of the husband is actually the role that the writer spends the most time with as he begins to break this down. And oftentimes the role of the wife gets a lot of attention, but the role of the husband is actually the one that he puts the most emphasis on. And so there's several verses where he's breaking down, okay, husbands, this is what it looks like for you to love your wife and for you to be able to get specific. I think it's because he knows, husbands, right? We're kind of clueless usually about everything, just in general, right? And so we need some specifics. It's like this past week, when you asked your wife or your girlfriend what they wanted for Valentine's Day, right? You asked and she gave you the answer that all wives and girlfriends give. I just want something romantic. Which is the worst possible answer any husband or boyfriend could get, right? I mean, that just strikes fear into the heart of a man, right? I just want something romantic. Oh my gosh, how do I do that, right? Like, what does that look like? You got to give me something more concrete, more substantial to work off of here. And so I think he spends his time focusing on husbands for a couple reasons. One, we're kind of clueless when it comes to this. Number two, this would have been unbelievably controversial. When you look at the time in which this was written, you're talking about a time and period in which really women in general had no rights. And yet God steps into this culture and says, here's the deal. Not only do I want wives to submit to their husbands, you guys are used to that. What I want you to do is I want husbands, I want you to submit to your wives. And this is what it looks like. It would have been unbelievably controversial. I don't think it's the most controversial statement in the passage. I think when he talks about how parents are submit to their children, it was more controversial. But he spends a tremendous amount of time on this because he wants to make sure that we don't miss it. He wants to make sure we don't glance over it. He wants to make sure we really get what he's saying here. It's very, very important. And so he begins to break it down. Okay, husbands, this is what it looks like for you. When you're looking at submitting to one another, husbands, this is what it looks like for you. A I want to take you to that passage. It's found in Ephesians chapter 5, just a few verses after 21. In verse 25, it says this: "For husbands, this means love your wives just as Christ loved the church." He starts off, says, "Husbands, here's the deal. I'm going to set the bar for you. I'm going to give you the standard. Here's the standard. You love your wife the way that Christ loved the church." Sets the bar real low, right? Just real simple. Here it is, guys. Here's the deal. You love the way Christ loved. Just like the best loving person you've ever experienced. You love like that. Okay, so he begins, the bar's really low, and then he begins to explain what he's talking about. He says, "He gave up his life for her to make her holy and clean, washed by the cleansing of God's word. He did this to present her to himself as a glorious church without a spot or wrinkle or any other blemish. Instead, she will be holy and without fault. In the same way, husbands ought to love their wives as they love their own bodies. For a man who loves his wife actually loves, shows love for himself. No one hates his own body, but feeds and cares for it, just as Christ cares for the church, and we are members of his body." He says, "Husbands, here's the deal. When you look at how you interact with your wife, guys, here's the deal. When you look at how you interact with the woman that you love her the way that Christ loved the church. You love her the way that Christ loved the church." And you know what's really interesting about this? He doesn't set this bar for everyone. You say, "Well, I mean, we're all supposed to love the way Christ..." No, no, no. Look, when you read through the passage, go back and read through it. Beginning in chapter 21, he breaks down the different relationships. He doesn't use Christ as the example for anyone else. He's being very specific here. He says, "Husbands, here's your bar. You love the way Christ loved the church." Now, again, like the idea of submission, that can be really vague. And it can be really easy for that to just kind of be out there. And I mean, what does that really look like? And if you're just reading this verse, the truth is that's where you're going to be left. You're just going to be looking at it like, what does that really even look like? But remember, this verse isn't on its own. This verse is inside of a context, and that context is the book of Ephesians. And in the book of Ephesians, he's spent 3 chapters at the beginning of this book defining for us how Christ has loved us. And there are certain things in particular that he made very clear at the beginning of this book that I believe speak directly to what he's talking about here, because he's referencing us back, right? Okay, I've explained to you how Christ has loved you. Now, husbands, this is how you love. Just like what I've just been talking about. And I think there are some specifics here that are really important that we need to grab a hold of. And again, for some of you, you're sitting here thinking, "Well, I'm not a husband." But remember, this is inside of a context of him teaching all of us how to love inside of this family. So all of us can learn from this. All of us can learn from this as far as how we've been loved by Christ. All of us can learn from this as far as how we love those around us, no matter who you are. But he's speaking very specifically here. He says, "Okay, husbands, here's the deal. This is what it looks like for you. You love the way Christ loved." Well, what do we see about how Christ is loved as you read through the beginning of the book of Ephesians? What have we seen as we've talked through this over the past month? I think one of the first things that you see, and guys, this is one of the first things that you need to grab a hold of if you're looking to put this into practice, to do what Jesus Christ said, to hear what I've said and put it into practice. One of the first things that you see is this. At the beginning of the book of Ephesians, it's unbelievably clear. Christ pursues us first. How do you love like Christ loved the church? You pursue first. And I know whenever I say that, that initially everyone's reaction is, "Oh, you mean I'm supposed to ask her out first?" It's a lot bigger than that, okay? It's a lot bigger than that. But to be honest with you, it does have something to do with that. And with the age of our church here, I get to have all sorts of fun conversations, fun, annoying conversations about people. And they'll come to me and say, "Well, you know, I like so-and-so. I don't really know what to do." And I'm like, "Ask them out." And they're like, "Well, I don't really know." I was like, "I already gave my advice. Either take it or leave it. That's all there is to it." And sometimes, you know, girls who are part of our church will come and talk to me about it. And I'll say, "I think you should wait for him to ask you out." They'll say, "You don't think I should ask him out?" I said, "No, I think you should wait." They say, "Oh, you're just old-fashioned." No. I'm actually not old-fashioned in very much of what I do. And the reason that I believe this isn't because I'm old-fashioned or because it's always been done this way. It's because of this principle in this passage. I think it's important that he pursues first. Not so that you can say he asked you out or so that you can say that you one-upped and you waited for him or anything like that. It has to do with vulnerability. It has to do with whether or not he's willing to be vulnerable for you, which is very important. Christ was willing to be vulnerable for you. He gave up everything that was rightfully his and all of his privilege and all of everything he deserved to be your servant. Knowing that many of the people he was serving and giving his life for would say no, would reject him. He became vulnerable for you. And part of building an unshakable family is that, guys, you're willing to be vulnerable for her. Because ladies, to be honest with you, you're pretty good at this, and you're pretty good at letting people into your heart, and you're pretty good at sharing your heart with people. Guys, you're the opposite of that. You're awful at it, like the worst possible at it. It's really, really bad, okay? And we're going to talk about this more next week, but guys, you have this thing called ego, and it's huge. It's like much bigger than this room. It's ridiculously large, okay? All of us have it. We struggle with it. And here's the thing. Here's the thing. If you want to build an unshakable family, you have to be willing to set that aside and make yourself vulnerable for someone else. And I tell girls, you want to know whether or not he can do that. Because if he can't and he won't, you don't want to be with him. Because it's going to be very, very important in the future. Because this doesn't just show up when you're trying to figure out who's going to ask who out first. This idea of being the one who pursues, this is far bigger than just who's going to ask who out first. I believe, guys, that this is calling for us over and over and over and over again to be the one who serves first. And in every relationship, there's going to be a time at which both of you have done something wrong. Right? If you've ever been in a relationship, you've been in this situation. And both of you have done something wrong. You've both hurt each other. You know, you're in different rooms. And both of you are thinking that you're ready to resolve this. But you're both sitting there thinking, I'm not going over there. They better come over here. I'm not going over there. And you're waiting. Guys, Christ came to us first. I believe that being a leader in a relationship, a true leader, is not about being the one who has all the authority. We talked about it last week. Jesus says, listen, leadership for you, it's not going to be like the rest of the world. It's not going to be about how you have authority and you lord it over. It's about serving and serving first. You go first. It's going to show up in all sorts of different ways in your relationship. One of the ways that I've experienced this in my relationship is when you have kids, you develop a system of how you're going to take care of those kids, right? And there's all sorts of things you don't want to do, like wake up at 3 o'clock in the morning, like change diapers. There's all sorts of things you don't want to do. And so you develop a system of how you're going to do that, right? And there's going to be a rotation or someone's going to take certain responsibilities, but undoubtedly something happens that isn't in the rotation. And you're both sitting there looking at each other like, I think it's your turn. I think it's your turn. And both of you know it doesn't really qualify for either. I'm going to wait you out. Guys, you want to be a leader? Your turn. Your turn. In your relationship with Christ, He went first. He served first. He always does. Over and over and over and over again. This idea of pursuit, it's about so much more than just who asks who out first. It's about being willing to be vulnerable. It's about being willing to serve first. And so for some of you, you're here. And guys, you know, you like her and you've been thinking about and talking about and all this. Just ask her out. Stop being a pansy and ask her out. Seriously. You say, well, I don't know. I don't know what her answer, I don't know what her answer is going to be. You know what her answer should be, but you don't know what her answer is going to be. And make yourself vulnerable. You don't know. But even if she rejects you, here's the thing. You get a chance to be able to learn how to be able to receive from Christ as opposed to needing to receive from someone else. And this idea that you're going to get married and then you're going to know, then you're going to practice being vulnerable. You're going to get married and then you're going to practice serving first. That's ridiculous. If you don't start practicing before you get there, you're never going to be able to do it when you do. Or you're going to make so many mistakes and you're going to have so many problems along the way that you're going to set yourself back. When you look at the example of Jesus Christ, you see someone who pursued first. It's so clear at the beginning of Ephesians. We did not pursue him, but he pursued us, made himself vulnerable to us. And men, that's what it means to love the way that Christ loved the church. As you continue to look through the book of Ephesians, you see not only that Christ pursues first, but then also you see that Christ loves no matter what. It doesn't matter how we respond to him. It doesn't matter whether we love him back. He loves no matter what. Completely unconditional. And inside of our culture, there's this idea that relationships are built on reciprocity. Right? And so I love you and you love me and I love you and you love me and we're a happy family. Right? Like Barney drilled this into our heads as kids, right? Reciprocity. It's all based on reciprocity. And I remember in psychology, in college, they taught us as counselors, right, that you need to make sure inside of relationships that people are loving one another in equal amounts. Because it's a dangerous relationship if someone is loving more than the other person. And reciprocity is the foundation of an unshakable family. Let me tell you something. If you believe that and you build your family on that, you are one storm away from destruction. Because undoubtedly in your life, there's going to come something that will happen that will stop one person or the other from loving the other person. And sometimes it will be a circumstance inside the relationship, but oftentimes it'll be a circumstance outside of the relationship that you had nothing to do with and no way to prepare for. I see this oftentimes in couples where they lose a child. And so all of a sudden, because of the pain, she loses the ability to be able to love. And for a time, it's just a numbness. And usually what will happen in those circumstances is that the other person will be able to love for a certain amount of time. But here's the thing about you. You were created to be loved, and your ability to love is actually connected to how much love you receive. That's why psychology teaches this, why it needs to be reciprocal. But God comes in and says, no. That's never going to work. That's never going to work because you're flawed and you're limited in your ability to love unconditionally. He says, so here's what I want you to do. I'm going to come into your life and I'm going to love you without any condition at all. And I am going to pour into you with everything that I have so that no matter whether they love you back or not, you can keep loving and you have everything that you need to keep loving that person.
the way that they deserve to be loved. And you look at the example of Christ, and Christ steps into our life and just loves and loves and loves and loves and loves. And Ephesians, guys, he steps into our lives and says, okay, now you be the one. And you watch your relationship with me. You take care of your relationship with me. You prioritize that relationship with me so that you can be loved by me in such a way that it does not matter whether she loves you back or not. You always love. And I hear people say quite frequently in conversations, man, I've loved, but she just doesn't love me back the way I need to be loved. And so I'm done loving. When you stand before God, that will not be an acceptable excuse. You say to him, well, she didn't love me, and so I couldn't love her back. Wrong. And God's going to look at you and say, but I loved you beyond what you could have ever needed. Now you take that and you bring that to her. And so as you look at this example that he's calling us to, guys, he's saying, guys, you love no matter what. You demonstrate me to your family first. You see this idea that Christ pursues us first. You see that God loves us unconditionally and just continues to love and love and love. And then beyond that, and this is one of the things that I think is so cool, and for me personally has been so unbelievably convicting. Beyond that, you also see that Christ has a mission. Let me take you back to this passage in Ephesians 5, because he doesn't just allude to this based on what he's already said in the chapter. He actually talks about it specifically in his description. He says, for husbands, this means love your wives just as Christ loved the church. He gave up his life for her. Why? Because he has a mission to make her holy and clean, washed by the cleansing of God's word. He did this to present her to himself as a glorious church. He's working towards something, right? Without spot or wrinkle or any other blemish. Instead, she will be holy and without fault. He says, look at how Christ is loving you. Not only has he given his life for you, not only has he purchased you back, adopted you into his family, but he has something that he's working towards in your life all the time. And he's trying to help you reach your full potential. He's trying to bring you to be who you are created to be. He has a mission. There's a passage that we talk about quite frequently here at Hoboken Grace. It says, he who began a good work in you will be faithful to complete it. He's working towards something in your life so that you can be everything that you were created to be, experience life to the fullest here, and one day be able to finally be who you were created to be, that he will complete it. He says, guys, this is how you're supposed to love your wife. Those of you who are currently in a relationship, or even if you've been in a relationship in the past, guys, let me ask you something. How many times over the past month have you found yourself distracted by daydreams about how you could help your wife or your girlfriend fulfill her potential and who God's made her to be? How many times have you found yourself distracted by or daydreaming or thinking about how you could reach your potential? As I worked through this, I was unbelievably convicted because I'm always thinking about, okay, how can I reach my potential? How can I grow? How can I continue to grow spiritually? How can I continue to grow personally? How can I continue to work towards this idea of who God made me to be and experiencing the fruit of the Spirit and love and joy and peace? I think about that for myself all the time. And I looked at it and I began to ask myself, okay, how much time do I really give to thinking about that for Anna? God began to work on me about something that needed to change in my life. When you look at the example of Christ and how he loves us, you see someone who's constantly working in our life for us to be able to achieve our full potential. And guys, he says, that's exactly what you're supposed to do in hers. How many of you even know who she wants to become? Where she wants to grow? How she wants to grow? And make no mistake about this, okay? Because in a little bit I'm going to talk about plan and how we have a plan and how we can build into this person, right? Make no mistake about this. Guys, this could be a huge mistake for you, so make sure you're paying attention here, okay? This is not that you sit down and come up with a plan for your wife, okay? You will find yourself at the place of that song before we started very, very quickly, right? It'll be over, right? You'll be calling me tonight. I need a place to stay. Do not go home and say, you know what, honey, I've been thinking about this and daydreaming about it. I have a plan for you. No, that is not going to work. What we're talking about here is taking the time to be able to sit down with her. And I want to give you practical homework application, guys. To sit down with her. If you're in a relationship, I want to challenge you to do this. Just sit down with her and ask her, how do you want to grow? Spiritually. Personally. And I know sometimes when we talk about potential, we think about professionally. God's rarely concerned with that. What he's talking about is who we are. How do you want to grow? And how can I help? How can I help? And I know, guys, when you hear me say that, for many of you, that's terrifying. You know why that's terrifying? Because we know we're probably not going to be very good at it. And that means we're going to have to be very vulnerable. And we're going to have to expose our weaknesses. But we already talked about that, didn't we? That we make ourselves vulnerable. Just sit down and ask, how do you want to grow? How can I help? And then begin to challenge yourself about the amount of time and thought that you're putting into your own personal development and the amount of time and thought you're putting into her achieving those goals, her continuing to grow, her realizing that potential. And sometimes it's going to be really, really simple. Oftentimes it's not necessarily really big things. Sometimes it can be the most simple of things. As I said earlier, I'm trying to enjoy this snow for what it is, and it's so rare that we get this. And I grew up in Michigan where we used to get tons of snow. And so as a kid, I remember loving snow and loving winter. And so I'm trying to build that into my kids as well. So yesterday we went out, and it's funny because I don't post things on Facebook about my kids because I like my kids to be able to go to church and people not know who they are so they can just go to church, right? As opposed to being like, oh, that's the pastor's kid. I'd like them to just kind of be anonymous inside of our church. But my wife posts things about our kids all the time. And so yesterday, I was out with my kids playing in the snow, and I'm getting texts from people about what I'm doing that I had never told what I was doing. But apparently, my wife is posting these pictures on Facebook because we went out yesterday in our backyard, and Caden and I built a ski slope, right? I mean, it's a perfect thing to do. And he's been learning how to ski, so we built this pile. It's about this tall, kind of sloped down so he could ski through the whole yard. It's not a long ways to go. For him, it was really, really exciting. I tried it. It was really boring. But he loved it. And then we decided we're going to build this huge, epic snowman. And so we're rolling this thing, and it was perfect snow for it. And the bottom one's like this big, and the next one was too big for me to be able to lift. So we ended up having to like roll it onto me so I could lift it up onto the cooler. And then we had to bring like lift it a little bit and put things under it so we could get it up on top. It ended up being like 8 feet tall. It's awesome, right? It won't melt for a year. And we get to the end of it, and Caden goes back by the window because we built it so Anna could see it through the window. He sits by the window, and he just kind of leans back. And this huge smile comes across his face, and he's like, man, Dad, that is unbelievably cool. That is unbelievably cool. And it's kind of silly too, Dad. And he just kept going on and on and on. And I'm sitting there and I'm like, it is cool, Caden, and I built it, right? And I'm getting like bigger and bigger. I'm so excited about myself, and I'm pumped up. At that point, I think I can build anything. Let's build a bigger one. And guys, you know what? You know what we're talking about here? Sometimes it's just as simple as paying attention to what's happening in her life. Taking the time to pay attention to what's happening in her life. And be able to sit back and over again say, man, the way you impacted that person's life, that was so cool. That was so cool. The way you serve people, that is so unbelievably cool. Your heart for people is amazing. Sometimes it's just paying attention and encouraging as you see that growth happening, as you see those steps being taken, just building into her in that way. Oftentimes it's not huge, it's just paying attention and bringing that encouragement in the right place in the right time. You see this example that he pursued first, that he loves no matter what. That he has this mission. Moving into our lives with purpose to help us experience our potential. And then finally, and this is the one that I'll end with. You see it throughout the entire New Testament. You see it in the book of Ephesians as well, as he's bringing this family together. And it's not based on what we do, right? It's based on what he's done and what he's going to do. One of the most amazing things about this journey with Christ and the way that he loves you is this. He takes responsibility. He takes responsibility. He says, I'm the one who's going to finish this thing. He takes responsibility. I had a conversation with a church planner not too long ago. They were talking about their church plant, talking about the leadership, and really just complaining. Talking about how this is going wrong over here, and this is going wrong over here, and this needs to change over here, and this is... And I'm sitting there listening to him talk, and I'm thinking in my head, you're the one who planted the church. Aren't you the one who set this up? And he talked about it like it was someone else's responsibility. And I hear this quite frequently inside of families. And dads will be talking about their families and complaining about their kids or complaining about their wife or complaining about this or that or the other. And I just sit back and think, whose responsibility do you think it is? Who do you think is responsible for this? Sorry, I just about broke out in dance moves across this stage. No lie. Right? Like you were about to see my moonwalk. Because that's the only dance move I have. That's how long it's been since I danced. That's fine. I hear them complaining. I think, who do you think is supposed to be responsible? And guys, ultimately, I think at the end of the day, for a lot of us, we need to stop complaining and take responsibility. That at the end of the day, we're the ones who are responsible. And maybe you don't know this, but if you will stop and take a look around, here's the deal, guys. Your family is taking their cues from you. Whether you like it or not, whether you want it or not, they're taking their cues from you. And as we continue with these roles, you're going to see they're supposed to be and as he's calling us to love the way that Christ loves, you see, not as we're talking about pursuit and loving no matter what and having a mission, but I believe in a very real way, he said, okay, guys, listen, you take responsibility. And you decide that you're going to be the one who begins with taking the words of Jesus Christ and what he's called us to do and putting it into action. It's amazing. I've been exposed to all sorts of different family circumstances and situations. When I was a kid, my dad's a pastor, and so he used to do a lot of counseling, a lot of family counseling. And he used to, literally just like fifth grade and up, he would bring me into these counseling situations. And I wasn't allowed to talk. I just sat in the corner and listened in these situations, and it really screwed me up for life. But then also... He would tell me about what was happening. He would never use names if he was talking about it and I wasn't there, but he would talk me through these counseling situations. And he's like, Chris, don't end up like this. Don't end up like this. And he's trying to teach me all the things not to do. And I've seen so many different family situations, so many different family dynamics. Only twice in my entire life have I seen a wife who was loved like what we're talking about today, who didn't honor and respect her husband. Hundreds and hundreds, if not thousands of situations. Only twice. You know why? She's taking her cues from you. And if you will love her this way, if you will pursue her that way, if you will love no matter what, if you will move into her life for her to experience and live out her potential, she's not going to have a hard time honoring and respecting you. She's not. You look at the lives of the kids, and we're going to talk about this in a couple weeks. If you will take what we're talking about in a couple weeks and you apply that into the life of your kids, what he's talking about here, I have never seen kids who don't respond to that kind of love. Doesn't mean everything's going to be great. Doesn't mean you're not going to have to discipline, but it means that they're going to respond to your discipline. God has some amazing things to say about family. And as he steps into our experience of family, he says, listen, if you will trust me, if you will take what I say and you will put it into practice, you can build your house on bedrock. He says, and guys, men, it starts with you. It starts with you. And we take responsibility that we're going to see this happen in our lives first. And then in the lives of those who are part of our family. We take responsibility. Don't look at family, whether it's our larger family that we're a part of, or our own individual family, the family that you hope to have, the family that you're pursuing, the family that you're building. Don't think that you just hope for the best. Don't build your house on sand. Listen to what God has to say. Trust him. And begin to put that into practice. And I know, guys, I know, as you look at this, it should be for all of us. This is unbelievably overwhelming. If you hear what we just talked about and you think to yourself, oh, I got that, you are in trouble, right? Because you are lying to yourself. You don't have it. Right? Because this is unbelievably hard. It takes a tremendous amount of discipline. It takes a tremendous amount of commitment. But here's the thing. God does not call you to anything that he will not equip you for. And he is not asking you to walk this without him. He's asking you to walk it with him. And he will be with you every step of the way. He will be the one who guides you. He will be the one who provides the strength that you need in the midst of it. But it begins with you hearing what he says. And rather than saying, no, I'm going to do it my way. It begins with you saying, okay, God, I'm willing to do it your way. I want to be that kind of man. I want to love that way. And you allow him to begin using you in your family. Whether that's developing you as you're loving your larger family, whether that's in your pursuit of someone, whether that's in your committed love for someone, wherever it may be, you make the commitment. I want to be that man. You say, God, you've told me that you'll complete what you began. Help me become that man. You trust him, and you begin to follow him. An unshakable family is not an illusion. I believe Jesus Christ has promised, if you will take what I've said and you will put it into practice, you can see it. Will you pray with me? Father, the truth is this, this standard that you're calling us to and what you're instructing us to do in one another's lives is very, very high and can be unbelievably overwhelming. Father, I want to pray for those who are here who are looking back on families that have been broken. Who are looking back on families that were built on sand. Father, I pray that as they look back, that they would experience your grace, that they would experience your love, that they would move forward with an increased commitment to you and to what you're teaching them. Father, I pray for those who are just about there, who find themselves in destructive circumstances and relationships that have been unbelievably damaged. Pray for the men here who are looking at their own situation and realizing that it's because they haven't pursued. Realizing that it's because they haven't loved unconditionally. Father, they're taking responsibility. Father, I pray that they would begin to move into those broken situations, putting into practice your word, knowing that this is not just hope for those who are getting started, but this is hope in the midst of unbelievable darkness, that you have the ability to be able to bring life back to lifeless marriages, lifeless families. Father, I want to pray for those who are just beginning, for those who are seeking. Father, I pray that they would value what you value. I pray that they would begin to work on this in their own personal lives. I pray for the men who are part of our family here. I pray that they would commit to become this kind of man, that they would commit to love this way. And Father, I pray that as we continue to move forward, that we would demonstrate the hope that you've given us. That we would see families that are built on submission. Families in which men love where you've loved us. And I pray that we would be able to bring that hope into the lives of the world around us and demonstrate who you are and what's possible with you. In Jesus' name, amen.